Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and today's conversation is part of a short-term, maybe longer-term fascination with track and field speedsters and their potential influence on our sport. Widely recognized as one of America's best middle-distance runners in the 2010s, Ben Blankenship joins the show to talk about his move into ultra-trail running, racing the Rabid Raccoon 100 in March, the nature of obsession and the willingness to push the limits at the top of the sport, the allure of the dirtbag runner lifestyle, and his experience at the 2015 UTMB, watching the likes of David Laney, Tim Tollefson, and Zach Miller throw down in that memorable year. With that, let's get into it. Ben Blankenship, it is a pleasure to have you on the Single Track Podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. I feel very out of my element, but I'm excited to be here.
I love that. And I was telling you offline, we rarely do backgrounds on this show, and the real ones, they know your resume, but I do feel obligated to talk about some of it. And I've got to recite some of your resume just because this is a trail running specific podcast. So a couple things. You've won gold at the 2015 World Relay Champs, took seventh in the 1500 at the 2016 Rio Games. In my opinion, though, your most impressive feat, you recently became the fourth human to ever break 335 in the 1500 and 220 in the marathon. I didn't realize that that was such a short list because I feel like there are more complete runners out there in the universe. Did that surprise you too?
It's only Americans. I found the Kyle Merber found this very obscure stat that I felt like if there's obscure stats, I want to be part of it. So it's a little bit meaningless. It's trivial, but yeah, it's kind of cool. I think I'll be the first to do sub 335, sub 220 in the marathon, and hopefully complete a 100 miler.
Okay, right on.
So it'll get more obscure as we go.
Touching a little bit on your background, I didn't realize also that you were at UTMB back in 2015 to witness David Laney podium at that race, which I think is so cool. Talk about that experience and how it impacted you.
Yeah, it was a super cool. Nike had just launched kind of the trail series, and for some reason they let me tag along to this trip that I will never be able to recreate. It was kind of this five-star full class service of we stayed in this mountain chalet, we hung out with really cool people, we ran on the course, we had dinner and lunch up in the Alps, and it was just like this epic trip that I will never be able to recreate, but it was a blast. It was super fun. I learned a ton about trails. I had come basically off a track season, and they're like, do you mind running a bunch? And I was like, oh yeah, I'm great. Like, I can run a ton. I can run easy. And then the first day we started running up hills, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, I am just going to hang out with like the really, really, like we're going to like basically hike. And I was like, I can do that. I can hike. Like, my ankles are not built for rocks at this moment in my life. And I had packed like a pair of pegs. I was like, oh, okay, I'm cool. Like, I got pegs. I'm fine. It was terrible. The running experience was terrible.
Well, it also makes me wonder, were there any other people from either the Oregon Track Club or Bowerman or anyone inside Nike that got to be there as well and witness the trail team do work?
No, it's just me. Was just me. And then, like, you know, the band of trail athletes. And we really didn't see that much of the race. We like went out to dinner instead of like crewing, which was like even cooler. I was like, oh, I'll see the start and finish. This is awesome. And that was about it.
If you're now sort of doing a retrospective and connecting the dots, did that have any impact whatsoever on what you're doing in 2024?
Probably not, to be honest, because I wasn't really immersed in it. It was such a obscure thing that we were going to, and I really had no idea the gratitude or like the magnitude of that race at the moment. It was really something that like I had missed making the world team. So I was devastated, and Nike was like, do you want to come do something really fun? And I was like, sure. And then I went and I was like, okay, this is super cool. I'll hang out in the Alps for a little bit.
Do you talk much with like David Laney, Tim Tollefson, Zach Miller, those Nike guys from back in the day?
A little bit. Yeah. There's a little banter between us. So not a ton. Our overlap, our like small little vacuums we live in, don't operate very often.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not sure if David Laney coined it, but there's this famous quote, which I feel I want to recite it here because I think it rings true. You either die on the track or you live long enough to see yourself become a mountain ultra trail runner.
Sums it up. Yeah. I'm basically a washed up athlete who just wants to stay in the running game as long as possible. And it felt fitting that I just continue to move up in distance. And I'm kind of a guy who likes to cannonball into things. So it was like, do I want to run a 50K? Do I want to run 100K? I was like, why not just run 100 miles, see what happens?
Quick break to thank NAC for supporting the show. NAC is the official nutrition partner of Singletrack, and you've heard me talk a lot about their mission, their products, and why I'm into what they're doing. But one thing I haven't talked a lot about that I'm pretty excited on are their race-specific nutrition quizzes. These exist on their website, and you know, with races like the Black Canyon 100K on the near horizon, you can take these quizzes, enter all your relevant information like height, weight, sweat rate, race day goals, and it formulates a nutrition plan right down to the precise aid stations on each of these courses. It's awesome. Go check it out for yourself at NAC.com. And while you're there, if you end up buying some product, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout for 15% off your next order. Another thing I find fascinating, obviously you've had a pretty decorated career in the sport, but like I was looking at your college resume and it didn't look to me like you had the resume that would indicate you were going to have the career you were going to have. So, and I think this is helpful to people that are also like aspiring pros that listen to this. What were your circumstances coming out of college, and what were the opportunities that you made the most out of?
Man, that's a heavy question. I came out of high school as kind of an odd athlete, where I didn't try very hard in school. And that really limited almost all my opportunities. I remember a few like college coaches being super exciting in the recruiting process. And then us having these like awkward conversations of like, oh, you're good at school, right? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. And then they'd call me back like, you know, a month later and they'd be like, bro, you got like a 1.4 GPA. I can't help you. And I was like, damn it.
1.4?
I was terrible. Like I was just terrible at school. And it was just like, I'm kind of a day to day guy. So it was like, okay, what I'm doing today is awesome. What I'll do tomorrow is who knows. And I never really thought about running outside of the high school level. It was something that I was like super into for a little while in high school. And I never thought about potentially even going to college. So that was just something that was kind of outside of my like scope of thought. It was like, I'm going to do this and then I'll figure out what I do next. Yeah. And I think, like you said, like my resume in college wasn't great. I made a lot of mistakes. And like, again, I never thought about running outside of that. I never had these dreams of like, oh, I'm going to be a professional athlete, or I'm going to go to the Olympics, or I'll do any of this. It was just like, let's have fun. Let's run a ton. And let's like have good fun at practice.
What were the opportunities though, like post college? Were there any pivotal moments that you can recall where it was like, this was kind of a make or break thing? This person appears or this event happens, and because of that, I got on this track that I've been able to make a career out of?
Yeah, I think there was probably two. One, my college coach, Steve Pacentia, he had ties to Oregon and Eugene, and he got me into the pre-classic. So I ran the international mile in the morning while I was in college, and I ran pretty fast. It was a good race for me. And it was like one of those things where I was like pretty ignorant. So I was just like, let's go out and try to run fast. And that kind of put me on the map for some of it. And then the other one is I took like a huge gamble. In that summer, I just went to Europe and I had like no idea what I was doing. I knew a few guys who were in Europe at the time, and I essentially just showed up. They're like, do you have a place to stay? I was like, no. They're like, do you know what races you're running? I was like, no. And they're like, okay, like come hang out. And I was like, okay, great. And I just like followed some guys, some great guys, like from meet to meet, and just like hoped that race directors would take pity on me, that I was like a 20-year-old kid who didn't know anything. And they'd let me into races, and I raced a ton that summer and got really good exposure, but it was a lot. It was basically just one big risk. And a lot of people, like I slept on people's couches and kind of just like dirtbagged myself around Europe.
Have you always loved the sport, or have there ever been interruptions?
I don't know if I love the sport. I love being out there. I love the idea of like being able to push yourself in this really unique way where it requires nothing other than willingness. I love that. I've had some large interruptions a bunch. So oftentimes I will get in shape too early or too fast. And I say all the time to my athletes and to kids, it's like, you know, be patient and like really work into it. And like the season's long, and I never take my own advice. I'm like, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to try to be in great marathon shape, and I'm going to try to do really fast stuff. And then I get hurt. I've done that my entire career, that like there's zero patience. I'm all gas and no brakes. And it's like, yeah, I've ruptured a ton of tendons. I broke a lot of bones, and like, I'm still here.
Are most people in the sport like you though, or are you an outlier? Like at the very top, like the people that are going for gold at the Olympics, are you an outlier even within that group, or are most people like you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think I take way more risks. I'm a guy that doesn't want to participate. Like I'd rather be first. I'd rather be last than try to make the team. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I don't care about making the team. I want to win stuff. And I'd rather be hurt than be like, okay, I'm in okay shape. I know I'm safe. That sounds really boring. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be boring.
I got to read this quote from your Instagram because it made me pause. You said, quote, "You can't be great without obsession. It's what the history books remember. The ones who kept going, kept pushing, kept fighting. Everest is littered with bodies, and that's okay," end quote. So my question is, why can't you be great without obsession? Have you met anybody who wasn't obsessed?
No, I have not in the greatness. No.
Like they didn't just ride talent, like very fortunately.
No, I don't. Like, I feel like the more I'm exposed to better athletes and better people and their unique things, the more obsessed they are. The more like it drives their day to day. It drives their minute to minute, and nothing else kind of matters.
Who's the least obsessed, most successful runner you've ever met?
I don't know. I think that's a tough question. Mostly because I don't know people that personally. Like most of the people that I kind of surround myself with are extremists, are people who are like, I'm doing this full tilt and everything that is in my life is all about fitness or is all about running. And I rarely have those moments where I interact with like normies who are like, oh yeah, I kind of casually run a little bit.
Yeah.
Like I run with like a great group of guys here that are running way too much for who they are. I'm like, why are you guys running 100 miles a week? They're like, oh, we love it. I'm like, that's just not that normal to like get up at 5 a.m. and like go run 20 miles. Like, and like, it's just what they do. I'm like, okay, this is cool.
So are you obsessed and self-motivated because it comes from something internal, or are you a product of your environment?
Man, it's heavy hitting questions. I think it's internal more than anything. Like I didn't necessarily grow up knowing I was on a run or like surrounded by people who were on a run. I just really like the idea of like finding those breaking points.
Yeah.
Of like where's the edge, and then how much further can I go before I break? Yeah. And I think a lot of people are concerned about those breaking points. They're like, I don't want to get hurt. I've never worried about that. I'm like, that's just what's going to happen. I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to have, you know, mistakes, and that's okay.
I want to talk about your style for a minute, because it's something like, as a fan of track and field, as a fan of running over the last decade, I've always admired. And I've always thought of you as sort of like an old school runner. You kind of work in silence. I think historically you is it correct that you kind of kept your training pretty private?
A little bit, yeah. Or I just like, if people would ask, I just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Make some obscure things up. No, I also am old enough that like social media wasn't a thing, right? Yeah. Like all of my contracts, never did they mention like, oh, you have to post on social media. Like they were like, run well, or don't run well. It's very clear cut how you're going to get paid.
But you're posting awesome content now. Like, you've got like the obsession post there and like this like foray into trail stuff. Like, what changed? Like, you're posting bangers now.
I think mostly like some of it's really fun. Other of it is like, maybe I'll get paid from it. Like, I do need to make like a livelihood here. Yeah. So it's a combination. It's a combination of like some, I do like to like share this process, but I also like money. I'm very money motivated too. Yeah.
Are you sponsored now? Like, after leading the Oregon Track Club? No,
no, no. I'm just a free agent.
Nike Trail's not knocking at the door.
No, no. We'll see. We'll see what happens after this 100-miler.
Okay. On your podcast, you talked about this distinction between bougie versus dirtbags in the running world. Explain that.
I think there's a lot of athletes who have these really good setups. They show up, they know what's going to go on. They have great training partners, they have great facilities. And then there's a lot of athletes who are just kind of making a go out of it. They're showing up at that like random parking lot as the sun's coming up, and they're just making fitness happen. And I've always really admired those. I admire both, but I think there's like a romance to the idea that like, you're that one random person that somebody sees out in the morning doing freakishly fast stuff. And they're like, what is that person doing? I kind of like that stuff.
What's an example of like a bougie setup in our sport versus a dirtbag? Like, you kind of explained your setup with the dirtbag like thing, right?
I was pretty bougie though. Like, I had access to Hayward Field, and like, I had a lot of like bougie things that came along with being a Nike.
Ultra G's, Woodway treadmills.
Yeah, I even have a Woodway treadmill in my garage. Really? And I've used it like 4 times. It mostly like, I just store stuff on it. I think bougie comes to the idea that like, you've had enough success that the Diamond League races are kind of home to you. Like, these catered races. Yeah. Like, I made pretty much all of my success and all of my money on the roads, like going from race to race throughout the fall, where everybody was like, I'm kind of tired, I'm going to shut down and get ready for the next indoors. And I was like, I'm going to take advantage of this free money. Like, I'm going to stay in shape and run road miles all summer and all fall. Mostly because I like money, but also because I was like, why not? Who cares if I have to like, you know, fly around the country and like, you know, the last row of the airplane. It's just the way it is.
So these are two equally legitimate pathways to the same destination, but one might be more like romantic than the other.
Yeah, a little bit. And I think it kind of depends on who you want to be. Like, I never minded like getting off a plane immediately having to race. I was like, okay, this is just the way it is.
Also, thank you to Rabbit for supporting the show. Rabbit is the official apparel partner of Singletrack, and you've heard me talk about them over the past 2 months, but I have become almost an everyday user of their new Cocoon 2.0 product. It's this advanced sweatshirt with a built-in turtleneck that pulls up into a secure hood and breathable face mask. It's got thumbnails and watch windows to keep your hands warm without a fuss, and a water-resistant finish and fleecy interior for the most comfortable protection. I wear it on my runs. I wear it while ski mountaineering. It's the real deal. Winter's here, you know, so go check it out. If you need to upgrade your kit, grab one and use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout when purchasing for 20% off your order. I know one of the ways, or maybe the primary way you consume the sport is you watch a lot of races. Like, you're not like consuming the sport in clips or through social, you're watching races. And I think, you know, there's a lot of hardcore fans of the sport listening to this. What do you observe, or what do you get from watching races that might not be obvious to the average fan?
I'm always looking for mistakes. I try to watch like races where maybe an athlete went in with the idea that they should make the team or they should win. And then it's kind of figuring out where those mistakes were made. That's really what I'm trying to look for, or where big successes happened. It's fun to watch, you know, runners have great days and run really well, right? But I think like, you know, a modern race would be like, what's Jakob Ingebrigtsen doing wrong? Like, what's he doing wrong that he cannot win these 1500s to save his life? Like, he should on paper, he should win them. But like, Josh Kerr keeps winning. He continues to win. And like, why is that? He doesn't.
What's your opinion? What's your opinion on why that is?
Yeah. He doesn't do anything different. Like in the 5K, when he's won, he's always taken this approach. Like, I'm going to let the race unfold and I'm going to have a lot of confidence that I'm faster than everybody else. And for the 15, he wants to win it in this really dumb way of like, I'm going to go to the front and I'm better than everybody else. And that just isn't true. It's just not true right now. And he refuses to do something different. Like, do something different. Just go to the back. Like, just go to the back. And that might be enough to win.
From a talent standpoint, do you think Jakob is the best of this generation?
Yeah. I mean, he's super talented. He's done a ton. I think it really depends on what... Like, for me, example, I didn't really care about running fast. It wasn't something I prioritized. I wasn't going to be a guy who was going to run sub 330. I just don't have that talent level. So I prioritized trying to make teams and trying to make money and having a ton of fun along the way. And I think you have to kind of figure out, how do you define talent? Is it running fast or is it winning medals? Because I think a guy like Josh Kerr, you could say, is more talented. He's won more. Yeah. I think it just kind of depends on how you define that.
When you're watching these races and you're seeing sort of like the start line vibes and you're kind of watching each runner shake out, are you pretty good at decoding like body language and nerves and stuff like that? And can you kind of predict from that who's going to perform?
I would say probably not that much anymore. I think when I was in the sport a little bit more and I sat in call rooms with people, I could. And now I think it's a little harder, especially because you don't, like, I think our sport does a terrible job. Like, why isn't there cameras in the call room? Why isn't there more behind the scenes of what people do before that small window of, you know, the race starts, the race finishes. And a lot of times you don't even see the whole race, right? I think our sport does a poor job in that. So I think when you're on the track and like, you can see more, especially those like few moments before the race goes off, you can start to tell how people are feeling.
Transitioning more towards like the trail running discussion. And even within our own sport, this is a really interesting thing to consider because, yeah, at least in trail, not a lot of people leave in this, I don't want to say distinguished, but like declarative, you know, I am moving on or I'm sort of pivoting type way. And it all makes me wonder, like, how does anybody of your caliber know when they're at a crossroads? So like, when you think about your career, did you leave when you needed to leave the track and the roads, or could you still be competitive there today?
I didn't leave early enough. I think I wish I would have gone the roads earlier, run the marathon right after 2019. But it's all hindsight. And I think for me, the biggest thing has always been like, what excites me? If I'm not excited about it, I'm not going to like go all in. And the track stopped exciting me when I realized that I wasn't that fast anymore. I was never that fast to begin with, but I slowly got slower. And the type of work that I needed to do to like really compete wasn't stuff I was able to do. And the marathon was super fun. I stayed in it to run one marathon, but I kind of realized pretty quick that like, it's not training that I'm going to be able to do sustainably for long enough to really get good at this. Could I have stayed and run faster? Maybe. But I also knew
incremental, that though, maybe, yeah, incremental at best.
Yeah. And it was like a huge risk reward. It was like, I'm going to continue to get hurt a lot and probably not race at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to keep doing the same repetition over and over to try to run faster than maybe what I'm capable of, or maybe where I am in training.
What was Ryan Hall's influence on you? Like, what were the biggest takeaways from his coaching style or his insights, even if they were beyond the marathon? I'm curious.
Yeah, I've been around Ryan a ton, and I think like his ability to get the most out of athletes is incredible. He really fundamentally understands what motivates people at a core level, and I think that has really given me a lot of insight into like a totally different kind of training culture than we need to do these workouts to get these results. It's like, how do we motivate you as an individual versus how do we just get you fit? I don't know
what
what
was that playbook for you? Like, what did he identify in you? Was it like the dirt bag type thing? Like, I'm just going to be a workhorse.
I'm really motivated by I'm really motivated by working together as a group. Like, there's nothing better to me than like going out and hammering like a tempo run or some intervals with a group of people. I love that.
Yeah.
Training by myself and doing hard sessions by myself, though I've spent an entire career doing that, has never really motivated me that much. I just don't get that much out of it. I don't run that hard versus when I'm in a group. And Ryan was always really good about like kind of breaking sessions apart for me where I could jump in and out. Like, I've done a ton of stuff with Sarah. Sarah was awesome to train with.
On the trail side of things, like, I know, again, including Ryan, like, you've historically gotten coached by people that have been in the places where you kind of want to be. Is it going to be the same thing with trail? Like, are you going to hire someone in trail who has kind of like been to the promised land?
I think that's a good observation. I always wanted to be coached by somebody who had walked out and done what I was trying to achieve.
Yeah.
I wanted to be under somebody's training who had stood on the same start line that I wanted to stand on. From Steve Pacencia to Mark Rowland and to Ryan Hall, I really wanted that like first person narrative. However, for this chapter, I'm kind of just like winging it and I'm kind of jumping in and I'm like, okay, I understand a little bit. I've talked to enough people that it's like, it's time on feet. I'm really simplifying it, but I think for this first chapter, I just want to do it. Like, I'm so terrified of the distance. I think a lot of people are like, oh, you're going to be fine fitness wise. It's just everything else that you have to worry about. And I'm like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all. Like, I've spent 20 years running in one straight line as efficiently as possible. I have never had to worry about a stick or a rock or going up or down hills. It's always been like, how efficiently do we go from point A to point B as quick as possible? Yeah. And running 100 miles is not that.
Yeah. I've been following your Strava pretty closely and I feel like specificity's been there. Like, there's an increasingly large graveyard of, call it 211 to 213 marathoners who come into the sport briefly and they think all they need to do is just extend a road long run by 10 or 15 miles and that's the ball game. And they make it like 20 miles into these 100K races and they find that, you know, like, terrain specificity matters a lot, vert matters a lot down. Yeah. And it seems like you're checking those boxes.
I went out really, there's a guy here in town named Matt Barnhart. He's a great guy, has successfully run a lot of races. He's a guy that works full time. He works 80-hour weeks sometimes and still bangs out 100-mile weeks. Super impressive. And I was like, I'm a pretty good athlete. Like, let's go do this like 30-mile run. I made it like 18 miles. And I was like, no, you should lead. Like, I'll follow downhill. I just wanted to like roll up in a ball and cry. I was like, my quads have never hurt so much in my entire life. We were at a point where like, I was like, I'm moving pretty good. And then we were like on these switchbacks and I looked down and he's like 800 meters ahead of me. And I was like, I don't know when this happened, but I want to die now. Like, if there's an opportunity for a tree to fall on me, that would be amazing.
Are you feeling the adaptations though? Like, having been at this now for a fair bit, do you feel like your body is agreeing with what you need to do to be successful in the sport?
I don't know about successful. A lot of it like is stupid stuff. Like, the front of my toes are finally starting to callus over from just being jammed into the front of the toe box of going down hills. I'm working a ton on quad strength. And a lot of it is just like, the other day I went out for 20 miles and I was like, I'll be fine without like any nutrition. Like, I just want to get this done. And it was like the worst 20 miles of my life. I was like, I really want this to be done. I made it back to my car with like 17 miles and my partner had bought me a chocolate croissant and I just like inhaled it. And then I felt pretty good for the last 3 miles. I was like, God, this is so dumb. Like, if I just go back to my car and make it an aid station, runs are so much better. And there's a little bit of like naivety, and it's also like just kind of learning. It's like, what can I do to make these runs better?
It does become an eating contest at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you, you know, we talked about like David Laney and Tim Tollefson earlier, but have you studied the transition to trail of other runners, like in your sort of like cohort, or like, I guess, how are you getting your education other than like the primary experience of going out there and just running trails?
It's pretty much all primary. I probably haven't done as much research as possible. The meet director of Wolf Creek, who's putting on the Rabid Raccoon, reached out to me a bunch and throughout a lot of years. And they're like, we really want you to come do some ultra stuff. And I was like, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit between indoors and outdoors. I can't make it happen. And suddenly I was in this position where I was like, I'm running more. I think I can handle the distance. If I'm super smart and just power walk it, I'll be okay. And I agreed to it even before I pulled out of the trials. I agreed to it even before I ran my first marathon. I was like, I'm really excited about it. I want to give it a go. But it'll depend on how my first marathon went. And after that first marathon, probably 2 days later, I was like, I'm all in. Let's do it. Let's run this 100 miles. Let's see what happens. A little bit of a long story. I just started jumping into it and I'm like, okay, what do I need the most? I need to get really comfortable time on feet. And the best way I can see that is just blocking days, doing big days back to back and doing all types of terrain, mostly vert, and getting comfortable being out there at night and trying to eat a ton.
So how did you get connected with this particular race? Because there's a whole litany of races you could have chosen, but Rabid Raccoon is the one you're doing. So how did you get to that one?
I'll be honest, a little bit of it is like appearance money. I was very motivated by that.
I respect that.
Yeah, thank you. They were super eager to have me. They were like, we really want to see it. We really want to make it happen. How do we get you here? And I was like, it doesn't take much. I'll be honest. It doesn't take much at this moment. Like, you pay me, I'll show up. So it was really kind of that conversation. And then I didn't realize how intense it was going to be. Like, after I signed up, I got like some DMs and they're like, it's a gruesome course. Why did you sign up for this one for your first one? I was like, I honestly didn't know. Honestly, I went into this totally blind. So we'll see.
You may already know this, but I went to go look at the starting list and Jared Hazen is running. And Jared Hazen is one of the absolute legends of our sport. Third fastest time ever at Western States.
Yeah.
Have you talked with him at all?
I haven't, but I will say I am participating. I'm looking to finish. The only time we will be together is at the start line and I will casually wave from the back of the pack.
I'm familiar with Ashland area trails to some extent, familiar with Portland area trails to some extent. I've never done any trail running in Eugene. What's the scene like there?
We have kind of extremes. We have groom trails, I call them, where like you can get outside of like, you know, Alton Baker Park, Priest Trail, where it's really nice bark trail. And then you can get on crushed gravel where there might be a route every mile that you have to deal with. But you can also, you know, drive 20 minutes and be on some really rugged country where it's all vert and super fun running. However, we just got this ice storm. So pretty much all the trails are just decimated. So a lot of it is just, you know, forest service roads that kind of go up. So,
okay. How long do you think, I guess my question is this an experiment or do you think you're going to be making your home in the ultra trail running space?
I can't answer that right now. I got to get through at least 70 miles before I decide. So I also like, you know, you talk about like a marathon build or you talk about like a track build and you're like, okay, do some strength in the fall, start doing some faster stuff in the winter and get ready for racing in the spring. And I don't feel like I will ever have enough time to properly train for this 100 mile. Like when I write it down on paper, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get enough training in before the start. Like, okay. I'm trying to like play it really cautious of like, I don't want really big days where I don't recover from, but I also need some really big days.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I'm going to fit those in yet.
Well, cause I guess I'm wondering, I mean, you're in your mid thirties, so you still got a ton of, I mean, and a lot, in my opinion, like you've got a lot of time, whether it's the marathon or ultras, like how much longer do you want to try to be as competitive as possible?
I think competitive is a charged word. It's like, what am I going to be competitive at? Like, I'm not going to go win Western States. I'm not going to go win UTMB. Can I be in the scene? Maybe, just from name recognition, and maybe I'll have some great days. But I also think running is a very young man sport. Like there's no doubt that if you're 20 years old and you have the desire to run 100 milers, you're going to be better than me at 35. Like there's no question. I might be wrong because I haven't run 100 milers, but I know from the marathon side that like I think the rhetoric of like, oh, you learn and it takes time. No way. If you're 22 years old and you're coming out of college and have a desire to run a marathon, you will run better than my old ass. There's no question about it.
There's a couple interesting outliers in our sport for inspiration. There was a guy, Ludovic Pomeray, who got fifth at UTMB last year. 49 years old.
Incredible. But I also, and I'm not bashing on the trail community at all, but it isn't yet as popular as track events, right? Their money isn't there. People aren't coming out of college transitioning to 100 milers who have the same talent level as, you know, world-class marathoners. I'm not throwing shade or anything like that, but the money has not always been there where I think it's starting to.
Has your move into trails piqued the interest of any other interesting people in the track and field or road running space?
I would say that like I was super motivated by like Grayson Murphy. Her ability to do a bunch of different stuff made me super excited. She dabbled on the track, she dabbled on the trails, and she kind of did a bunch of stuff really well. And I was like, that sounds really fun. Like I've lived in this very narrow thought process of like, what does success mean to me? And I would look on her social and see what she was doing in Flag. And I was like, that looks like a blast. Yeah. It looks like an absolute blast to go spend a weekend up in the mountains and then do a trail or do a track workout. Like that sounds awesome. So my interest was kind of peaked because of that.
Right on. Yeah. Grayson's an amazing example of that. And
yeah,
it's also cool in her case that she proves that you can be versatile, that, you know, you can dabble in the trail space, find a lot of success, and then still, you know, I mean, maybe she rips a really fast marathon one day, or she's still doing stuff in the steeple. It doesn't just go away overnight because you're trading disciplines.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, this has been awesome. Yeah. Like I said, I'm super stoked to see what you do at this race. What's the exact date, by the way, for people to follow along?
It's March 17th through the 18th, and it will definitely take me more than a day, I'm pretty sure. Okay. So
that's pretty cool that the Rabid Raccoon 100 is throwing out appearance fees. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Any final thoughts? Like, I know you're working on some other cool projects. Is it the Endless Miles project?
Yeah. Endless Mileage Project. Yeah. EMP for short. We do two things, two pillars is the fast forest and then recovered running. We plant a bunch of trees. We plant trees that represent American milers who have broken 4 and 4:30. And then recovered running is a super simple act that I've been doing for years, is collecting gently new and used running apparel and then giving it back to athletes who kind of, they need a little support. Athletes who maybe are a little under-resourced, from middle schoolers to high school to a bunch of different programs throughout the state of Oregon.
does that extend into trail at all? Is it mostly a road running sort of like high school track initiative, or how does that work?
Really, we serve everybody. But really it's track and field programs. It's middle school track and field, it's high school cross country and track. There's a few other programs that we support, but primarily it's running events. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something we always think about in trail running. Like, not every metro area has easy access to trails. How do we grow the sport, yeah, especially at the youth level? But that's a really cool initiative we're working on. We'll make sure to link to that. Appreciate as well. That. Ben, it's a pleasure.
Super
excited to be in the scene. Longtime fan. Glad we got the chat. Appreciate the time.
Yeah. You'll only have to edit out like 50 minutes.